Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today we're going to talk a little bit of landscaping, a little bit of thread, and a lot of design inspiration. Have you ever wanted to do a landscape quilt? I think a lot of people do. It's very interesting. They have their particular style. Well, today I asked Joyce Becker to come on. She is a master of landscape quilts. She has written multitudes of books on how to do them, and one of her most recent books is How to Do Them Quickly, which of course is my favorite way to do everything. Hey, Joyce, welcome to the show.
Hi there. I'm sorry, there was a little blank there in the transmission. I hope it's not that thunderstorm.
Right, we don't want any thunder. I have like one sort of separating above my head over here. That's what I'm hoping for anyways. So, Joyce, describe a landscape quilt, because some people may not really quite know what we're talking about.
Well, a landscape quilt is normally a realistic vision of a scene. A lot of times they're called pictorial quilts.
Okay. All right, so we might have a landscape or an ocean or a garden.
Oh, yeah, mountains, ocean, water, yeah. Desert, whatever.
Yeah, so you can really identify what everything is and, you know, sort of like a photo.
Right.
So
use photos for my inspiration sometimes.
Well, I can imagine that would be very helpful to have a photo to work from. So tell me, Joyce, what is your favorite part of creating landscape quilts? So why did you really get sort of hooked on these?
Well, I absolutely love the designing part. And actually, I got hooked on it when I went to Mount Rainier for a photo shoot for my first book, Nature's Patterns. And I looked through the lens of the camera, and, you know, I saw the detail interest in the foreground, the midground, and in the background. And I thought to myself, this is really what I want to do. So I just had to come up with the techniques to actually create them realistically.
Mm-hmm. So it's like painting almost, like, you know, a painter sees a scene and is painting, you know,
right.
a realistic painting. Do you have like an art background? Are you a painter?
Oh my gosh, I can't even draw a stick figure. So I tell my students always that, you know, you don't have to be an artist, you don't have to be able to draw. It's just, you know, how you create the scenes with the incredible fabrics we have and your scissors. Mm. So, you know, that's all there is to it, basically.
Fabric and scissors. I think you're making it sound way easy, Joyce. Fabric and glue. Okay. So let's talk a little bit. Let's talk about fabric, because you just touched on that. You know, I'm thinking, you know, occasionally the quilt industry produces fabric that looks like a stone wall or a brick or wood. I mean, do you use those types of fabrics in your quilts?
Oh, I absolutely do. It used to be we didn't have those when I first started making these in 1995 or so, and so I'd have to create them myself. And so nowadays it's so much, you know, it's much easier to do it, and we have wonderful boutiques. We have hand-painted fabrics available, hand-dyed, mm-hmm. and all of those really fit into landscape quilting easily. Sometimes I change the fabric and have to create it myself, either by painting it or manipulating it. Sometimes I use tulle or organza as overlays to change the value in the landscape, because it's crucial when you're creating a landscape quilt to make it lighter in the distance and darker in the foreground. That helps give the perspective. So
well, that,
you can
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, that'd be really important, because if you made like the mountains all look like they're sitting right on the water, like the cover quilt on your book, Quick Little Landscape Quilts. It has purple mountains, and then there's a lighter shade of purple, and then an even lighter shade of purple.
Right. And then you do also, you also do that with the scale or the size of the elements you cut. So the smaller elements would be in the far distance, and mm-hmm. then the larger ones in the foreground.
So now, do your books tell that kind of stuff? Is that what is in there?
Oh, yes. It covers everything, every technique that I use, so that it makes it easy for students to understand it. And I love to write, so I try to make good directions so people can understand them.
Right. In your books, I'm looking right now at the newest one, the Quick Little Landscapes, and you have a lot of examples in there to show what works and what doesn't work. So that's really nice. Like if you see it like a fabric that has a deer on it, you know, and then you want that a deer in your landscape, will you actually cut the deer out of the other fabric?
Yes, I do. Okay. So actually my technique is raw edge applique, so I start designing it at the top down on a piece of muslin that's stabilized. But in this case, for the Quick Little Landscape quilt, I actually design it on a Fastifuge, which is a heavy-duty stabilizer that's fusible. So that it'll fit into a mat and a frame. So they're actually framed gifts, and that's how I actually started making those. I started making them for Christmas gifts. You know how you like to make quilted gifts for your family and friends?
Yes.
And I knew I couldn't do the traditional layered quilts because it takes too long. So I thought, well, why not do some smaller ones on this Fastifuse stabilizer? And halfway through making them, I decided, well, you're nuts. This is a great book for, like, you know, people that want to make something quickly.
Right. So there's no quilting on them afterwards?
Oh, there is quilting. I mean, or, you know, thread work. Stitch them down with invisible thread, and then I go in and do a little thread work. But you don't actually see the back of it, so you don't have to put in batting and backing. You just slide it right into the picture frame.
Ah, that's
so, you
tricky.
Know what? My family never got their Christmas gifts.
No. So they all went for the book. You're like, oh, we're gonna go to the store this year, right? So will they ever get these? Are you gonna?
Oh, I think so. Yes, I think they will.
So tell
me, more.
There's the little things that you do. You have little, you know, techniques and tricks. Tell me first a little bit about what you use tulle or netting for, and what is the difference between them.
Well, netting has wider holes and it's stiffer. And I like to use netting like a turquoise or a blue over water because it actually makes it look kind of slippery, like water.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And then tulle is a finer grade, like bridal illusion tulle. It's what they use for bridal veils. And it comes in all kinds of colors. So I use that when a value in my fabric isn't quite right, and or organza for that matter, and I put it over the portion of the landscape, like if I want it to look lighter in the distance, I'd probably use a light colored and put it over a portion of it just to make it appear lighter in the distance, whereas in the foreground you would use a real dark one to pop it out.
Okay, so it's all about creating that light and dark effect for the distancing.
To give the perspective.
Now, how do you shop for fabric? I mean, do you shop by project, or you just buy things like that look like rocks so that you have it on hand? You know, what do you do?
Well, you know, when you see a good fabric, you need to buy it.
Yeah.
That's my motto.
the rock fabric, right?
Right. Or an ocean fabric or whatever it happens to be. And usually, you know, I'm a one-yard lady, but there are those fabrics that, you know you're going to use over and over. So in that case, I'd probably get 5 yards. But when I see it, I buy it. And I shop at conferences. I shop online at eQuilter a lot, you know. Wherever you can find good landscape fabrics and you see it, you buy it.
So how do you know it's a good landscape fabric?
Well, usually by the scale and also, you know, the colors and if it looks realistic. You know, if it looks false, you know, too countrified or not realistic. I don't buy it. But, you know, sometimes you'll see, like, a fabric with a panda bear, and I'm not going to use the panda bear, but there's a whole bunch of foliage around it, and the foliage is terrific, so I'll buy it for the foliage and just, you know, cut it up.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a really good tip. I hadn't thought about that, that the main thing on it that everybody might look at is the panda, and you're like, I'm never going to use that, but the rest of it is what we really should be looking at.
Right, right. Ooh. And the scale and the color and the realism, that's what I'm looking for.
I like it. I like it. Now, we have about a minute. Tell me what you teach when you go out on the road. Is it all about landscapes?
It's all landscapes, yes.
Yeah.
You know, if I have a longer class, I'll teach beautifully embellished landscapes and give the students more tips on how to embellish it, which I love doing. Mm-hmm. I use a lot of found objects in my studio, dryer lint, that sort of thing, yarn, whatever.
So how do you use dryer lint?
Well, I love using it on mountains, you know, that have glaciers, and to depict the, you know, the rocks on the glaciers. And then I cover it with a layer of white organza, and it looks very realistic. You don't put it on like blobs or anything. You have to kind of thin it out, but it's much easier than cutting those little tiny pieces of fabric.
No blobs of dryer lint. Okay,
that's no
good
blobs.
Tip. Good tip. And so your website is JoyceRBecker.com, and
that's right.
Do you have a place for, you know, like a workshops on there?
Yes, I do. Yes.
So
and gallery and everything you need to know.
It's got a gallery and workshop. So what is this is the most current book, right? The
yes, it is.
Landscapes. Okay.
It is.
And then what is one of your other books that people might want to pick up?
Well, Beautifully Embellished Landscapes and Luscious Landscapes, but those are only available from C&T Publishing as ebooks now.
Okay.
So you can go online and order those digitally.
Okay. Well, that's awesome because, you know, people like digital books now. They're becoming really popular. Joyce, this has been wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is really great. I want people to go out to your website, and they need to do JoyceRBecker.com. And you're on Facebook as well.
I am.
And you're part of Twitter and do a whole lot of other things. So thank you.
Well, you're so welcome. Thank you, Pat. Have a great day.
We'll be back in a moment with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, hello, Luscious, by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Get
Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have got Leah Day back on the show. We are going to talk thread today because thread is something very important to our quilting and putting all the layers together. So, hi, Leah. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks, Pat.
So, you know, let's talk thread. It's like so important, but I think, don't you think when people start out with machine quilting, they just use whatever thread they own, like what they've been piecing with?
Absolutely. And it's so easy. I did it the same way. It seems kind of logical that you would piece a quilt and then quilt with the same thread that you used to piece it. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is there are some threads that are actually easier to quilt that actually make the process a lot easier to do.
Yeah, you know, when you and I work in very different ways, our particular style of quilting is very different. And so this is what's going to be really fun today. We're each going to talk about sort of how we approach things and why it works for the style that we do. So let's have Leah go first. you work in, tell us the kind of thread you work in and why it works out for you.
Okay, for machine quilting, that's free motion quilting, I'm using Isochord polyester embroidery thread. And it's usually sold. If you go to most Bernina dealerships now, they carry it. It's about $6 for a 1,000-meter spool. And that's important because when you're free motion quilting, you are going to use a ton of thread. And you're going to be running through those bobbins quickly. When I sit down and wind bobbins, I wind 25 at a time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's how many I'm going to go through in a particular section of a quilt. That's not even the entire quilt. Now, of course, I'm quilting pretty densely, and the quilts that I'm making, whether it's a wall hanging or something for show, I'm quilting very densely. So, you know, if you're quilting bed quilts, of course, you're not going to need that much thread. But even still, you're going to be going through a lot more than what you do for piecing. And so having a thread that's affordable, that you get a lot on a spool, is really a valuable thing. The other reason I use Isochord is it doesn't have a lot of lint. Mm-hmm. And lint is really something you want to look at, because if you have a thread that is basically spitting out a lot of lint, especially down in your bobbin case, that lint can jam up your machine in just two bobbins. And unless you're brushing it out, you know, you're going to destroy your machine, basically. So I think both of those things are super, super important. And, you know, it's also thin. It's beautiful. It comes in a 300-plus colors. So it's one of those things, once I found Isochord, I stuck with it, and I haven't changed since.
Now, why is that the thin? That it doesn't have a weight, does it? Because I work in cottons, and
yeah,
they have weights.
It's 40 weight, but it's, you know, 40. The whole thing with weight is kind of confusing. There's a really good article that I found once. I think it was on Superior Thread's website that kind of debunked the whole weights thing, and it's kind of arbitrary. Basically, what I took from the article is it's kind of arbitrary, the whole weight. Feel it in your hands, stitch it on your quilt. If you see the thread on the surface of your quilt and it looks like a kid's crayon drawing, you might want to go with something thinner. It's really more about look and feel more than anything else. I don't like the super thin threads. Like, I tried to use bottom line. I really wanted to like it, but it shredded too much in my machines, so I wasn't able to use it. And I found that it was almost too thin. I was losing some of the texture I was going for. So it's really personal choice more than anything else.
It is. It is amazing. And you have to test the threads. Like, I work in cotton, and and I work a lot with Orafil threads because I like them. They do have a low lint factor for a cotton thread, you know, because cottons
Absolutely.
Are going to have way more lint than the others do. And they do come in weights. And they're even, like, Mettler thread even has, like, a 60, which is very thin. 50 is, like, your regular sewing weight. 40 is a little thicker. 23 is starting to get chunky. You can really see it, like the long armors would put that. Yeah, and it's got that a lot of definition. But like you said, if you're doing your work densely, you wouldn't want a thick thread because it would just be overpowering.
Exactly. And, you know, I would say of any thread that I would say is kind of comparable, if you have to quilt with cotton, I would say quilt with Arfil 50 weight cotton. I've played with a lot of different threads, and I think the 50 weight is about the, you know, as close as you can get to the Isochord 40 weight. I don't know why the weights are different
right.
numbers, but
Every manufacturer is a little different.
Yes. Exactly. When I sit down, if I'm sitting there going, huh, I think I might want to play with cotton thread, I'll go to Arfil 50 weight if I'm going to pick anything. So.
And that's nice for people who don't want to collect a lot of threads, because that's what they can also piece with. And they can machine applique with that weight thread of most manufacturers. So it's really, it's good to try it, right? To go out and see what you own and what it looks like in a sandwich.
Absolutely. And, you know, the biggest thing is don't be afraid of thread. You know, a lot of times you'll go to a store and they only carry cotton. They only sell cotton. And if you ask about polyester, they kind of look at you like you grew two heads. And, you know, the whole all cotton all the time thing, you know, that's something that really started in, you know, in the 70s, 80s. There were really bad polyester and cotton blends, and they get a really bad reputation. And then, of course, that reputation has been passed on from grandmother to daughter to us now. And I'd say that the biggest thing to keep in mind is that we've come a long way. And don't be afraid of trying something new, particularly if it is the exact color that you're looking for, particularly if you're struggling to use anything else you put in your machine. If you're using a thread that is shredding every time you take three stitches, clearly that thread is not going to work. You know,
not going to work for you. Right. So you need to go try something else. What about top and bottom? Do you always go with same weight, same thread, top and bottom?
Absolutely. Always match and match everything. Match the color too.
Right.
And I get a lot of people that get angry with me about that, because they're like, oh, well, my back is red and my top is yellow. You know, what do I do? And the answer is, well, you're going to have some yellow thread show up on that red backing. Next time, think through your backing a little bit better, baby.
Right. Right. Make a floral that has a lot of, or a big print. Yeah, this gorgeous big prints. They hide all that.
Exactly. But that's going to solve a lot of issues with, you know, you get those little dots. If you mismatch different colors, and the little dots, you can't, it's not a tension issue. It's just something that happens with almost every single machine. It's just a little bit of bobbin thread showing on the top, a little bit of top thread showing on the bottom. You cannot adjust it away. It's always going to be there, and it will drive you nuts. So just use the same color thread and don't tear your hair out. You know, it's easier that way.
It is. I totally agree with that. And if you have variegated, I always say, like, pick a shade in the middle. If it's a light to dark variegated green, pick a medium green.
Absolutely.
Because you can't put the variegated and have it match in the bobbin. That doesn't work. So
no, it's totally. Yeah. It's always going to be the opposite.
It's always going to mess up. Well, let's talk about some of the more, you know, specialty threads, because you've used metallics, but, you know, I haven't. So what can you tell us about metallics?
Well, always use a metallic needle, number one. I've you know, played with metallics a good bit, and I could say that the metallic needles are absolutely worth every penny. They really do make metallic thread work in almost any machine a lot better. As for the brand that I like the Yenmet metallic threads. I think that they're high quality, and they shred a little bit less than the others that I have experienced. If I'm wanting to go for something with a lot of punch, I'll use the Razzle Dazzle. I can't remember the brand, but I know Ricky Timms kind of created this. Like I said, I don't remember the brand, but Razzle Dazzle is a super cool, very, very thick, glittery thread, and you only put it in your bobbin. You only put it in your bobbin. You can't thread it through the top of your machine. You put it in your bobbin and you thread something a similar color. Like I use Isochord, balance it with Isochord on the top, and then you increase your top tension. You decrease your top tension so that way it will actually stay on the surface. So you're going to be quilting from the back side. Like reverse, you're going to be quilting and seeing the back up on top. I'm not describing that all that well, but you can really get some cool effects with that stuff.
Ooh, fun, fun, fun. How about the clear threads? Do you work with those?
No, I don't. Yeah. I get a lot of questions about those. If I had to say the reason why, it's because if I'm going to sit there and bother to quilt it, I want you to see it.
Right.
And, you know, and even I don't care what brand it is. I've played with them a little bit, and, every single one of them has some kind of sheen, some kind of shine to them. So you mm-hmm. might not be able to see it from 5 feet away, but as soon as you get up closer to that quilt, you can see the stitching, and usually it's not very nice. It doesn't look very nice on the surface.
The people who like to use it is because they don't want to change threads and they don't want to, try to match to what they're doing. And so it just sort of, they feel it blends in. So that might be why people might like it. But definitely pick a high quality.
Absolutely.
There are a couple companies that make it and make very good quality. So, don't go cheap on that, on the clear thread, because I think you need to get a good brand.
I would completely agree. And if you don't want to change thread colors, mm-hmm. just consider this idea. Contrast is your friend. Pick one color. I like white, and mm-hmm. stitch it on everything. And don't be afraid of the contrast. Sometimes being able to see what you're doing will make you a lot more conscious of what you are doing, and you'll be able to learn and get more control over your quilting. And that's a valuable lesson I learned only by contrasting myself. It made an enormous difference in my quilting ability.
Well, you're a brave woman, Leah. Well, this has been great. We're done with this segment. You're going to come back next month and we'll talk about something else.
Absolutely. Sounds good, Pat.
Okay, this is Pat Sloan with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We were talking to Leah Day. You can find her at freemotionquilting.blogspot.com or just put in leahday.com. We'll be right back after the message.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts & More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. Every so often, I have on a guest, and we get to talk a little bit longer than one segment. Today, my guest is author, fabric designer, and teacher Kim Deal. You all know Kim's work. She makes fabulous quilts, warm and cozy, applique, pieced. They just make you want to curl up and read a good book with her quilts. They're just gorgeous. She's a regular contributor to American Patchwork and Quilting's family of magazines. So I asked Kim to come on today so we could talk about her design process. She's going to give us a lot of applique tips and a whole lot more. So hi, Kim. How are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm doing great.
So tell me a little bit about your style of quilt making. So for people who may not have found you yet.
Well, my favorite quilts are probably those that are rooted in tradition. I love those kind of tried and true blocks that have been around for generations, but I try and use colors that are a little bit more current and modern, nothing fancy, and a lot of times I do put applique with things because I just think it doesn't take very much to elevate that quilt, but the bottom line is I want something that's easy to live with. You're not afraid to use it.
I think that that's, I think that that's what makes your quilts so remarkable, is people want to make them because they're doable and they connect us back to too. I like antique quilts. Do you like antique quilts?
I love antique quilts, and that really is the inspiration behind a lot of the quilts I make. I just love those old-fashioned blocks. They just do something for you. They just make you feel at home, and you're not afraid to just wrap up in them and use them. I don't want a quilt that I have to just sit on the shelf and be afraid to touch.
Don't touch it. It's got white
in it.
You get it dirty. That's so. Let's first talk about appliqué, because you do both. You piece, you appliqué, and then you mix it up in the quilt. And
yes,
I love to appliqué also. What style of appliqué do you do?
Well, you know, when I first began making quilts, I needle turned everything, and I really, looking back, was kind of a handwork snob. And, you know, once you have deadlines, you have to be a little bit more efficient and be a little quicker. And I didn't want to feel like I was giving up that quality that you gain when you needle turn and do, you know, for me, raw edge. I wanted something that really mimicked that old-fashioned, really traditional look. So, you know, I sat down and just kind of dove in, taught myself how to do it. I had just a really loose idea how machine applique was done.
Okay.
And through a little bit of trial and error, you know, developed a technique that I use now that's kind of a variation on the commonly used applique technique, where, you know, typically you iron your freezer paper pattern pieces shiny side down, you run glue stick around the edge, finger press, and stitch. I tried that once, and I didn't care for it. Your fingers are kind of a mess and, you know, sticky. Your patterns, if they have a direction, will come out backwards. So I do kind of a variation on that technique where I use a sparing amount of glue stick on that dull paper side, anchor it shiny side up. Then I take the iron, and you can press that seam allowance over onto the waxy side, and then you stitch it down with a really tiny little zigzag stitch that falls one, you know, stitch on, one off in the background. Mm-hmm. That kind of perforates that paper edge, and it lets you just peel it right out. Nothing comes out reversed or backwards. It's much quicker than needle turn, but it looks like needle turn.
So let's talk about that part, the turning over and all that, because, you know, like you, I've tried a lot of different methods, and I've not been very, personally, not been so wedded to, you know, having a shape prepared in advance. I don't seem to do that as efficiently as I might do fusible, which is what
That's because you haven't yet taken a class from me, Pat.
Oh, Kim, that's it. When are you teaching? I gotta come. That's it. That's the whole problem.
Well, you know, I have people come to class sometimes, you know, because I do a lot of workshops, and they'll be a little bit anxious. They think they can't do it. And, you know, I really think over the last several years, I've, you know, really honed the technique. Mm-hmm. People are really surprised that it's got a very short, you know, quick learning curve, and you do get an excellent result. You know, the benefit of it is that you know before you even stitch your applique down that the shape is perfect, and you are really able to get the most beautiful, crisp, sharp points with the technique that I use. And I think that that is probably what surprises people more than anything, because when you do needle turn, a lot of times you're kind of stitching up to that point and you cross your fingers and say a little prayer because you never know if it's going to behave and do what you want it to. But with this technique, you really do consistently achieve beautiful, sharp, crisp points.
So tell me, let's describe like a heart. Let's see if we can do this, because I always, you know, anytime you teach any kind of applique shape, the heart has the innie and the point, you know.
Right.
So there's always these two places that are the bugaboo of all applique.
They're the challenge. You
know, yeah, the challenge. That's a better word. Yes, the challenge spot.
Bugaboo works though too.
Yeah. So let's do the point, because when you go down to your point and you have, you know, you're flipping it to the back with your little bit of glue stick, right?
Well, what I do, Pat, is I just anchor that pattern piece if we're using a heart, just a little dab right in the center on that paper side. Mm-hmm. You cut out your shape and you add a quarter of an inch seam allowance. And I find people who do needle turn tend to want to make that really scant. But for this technique, a quarter inch is good because it's going to give you a little more to manipulate and grab a hold of and work with. Mm-hmm. You start at kind of a gentle curve or a straighter edge, and then you work up to that point. And what I do is just use the pad of my finger. I'm right-handed, so I hold my iron with my right hand, obviously. And then I slide that seam allowance onto the paper pattern piece with my left hand. You know, I use my index finger. Mm-hmm. And as my finger slides off of that seam allowance, the point of my iron sweeps in right behind and just anchors that in place.
Okay.
And I let my iron rest there and hold that in place while I move forward and pull the next section over. So you're putting a lot of, you know, a good amount of heat on that piece to really anchor it. When mm-hmm. you come up to that point, you just pull that seam allowance over, let it extend beyond the point, and then all you do is you fold that next side straight over onto the back of your piece and you continue on up. So typically points are done, you know, with freezer paper where you would fold in the center portion first and then you fold mm-hmm. in each side. But then that's giving you three folds of cloth. You have extra bulk. And mm-hmm. a lot of times that point is a little bit delicate and you'll end up folding it to some degree and it becomes blunt. So once you've done this, you know, you just continue working on up that next side. The only time anymore that I clip a curve on an applique mm-hmm. is if I have an inner point like the top of a heart or a really pronounced okay. inner curve. And I find that almost always just one clip in that seam allowance straight toward the paper, mm-hmm. stop just two or three threads away from the paper edge is going to be enough. And what I do is press almost up to that clip, and then I kind of reach under that inner point at the top of the heart with my finger, smooth both sides of that fabric where the clip is onto the pattern piece. And then again, just sweep in right behind with the iron, and it will just smooth that right up good against the paper. You get a good, crisp, sharp inner point. And then you continue. When you're done, you know, the little outer points you did, you know that fabric's not going to stick to fabric.
Right.
So what I do then is I go in and just put a little dollop of glue stick between the layers, you know, underneath that seam allowance flap. Use mm-hmm. a little auler stiletto to kind of grab a hold of it and then just slide it in from the edge so that it'll be hidden from the front. Tap it with the point of the iron, let it rest for a couple of seconds, and it is just perfectly anchored in place, and you do just get a beautiful, beautiful sharp point.
Ooh, okay. We're all taking classes with Kim. Here we go.
That's
Now, do you have to have a particular brand of freezer paper, or does it matter? I mean, are some created better than others?
You know, some I think are better than others, but I think that personal preference very much enters into that choice. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times, too, what will factor in is what you have available to purchase, you know, and to buy where you live. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, ultimately just experiment with those and find one that gives you the results you want. Typically, I like to use one that's not overly heavy, because the heavier mm-hmm. it is, the harder it's going to be to release it later.
All right, so then how do we get that paper out? It's not coming out before you stitch.
No, we leave that in when you stitch, because what I find is that little bit of that paper in that piece is really going to stabilize that applique. You mm-hmm. don't get any stretching or distortion. What I do then to stitch it is turn it over so that you're looking at the back where that pressed seam allowance is. I apply little dots of liquid basting glue for fabric right down the center of that seam allowance, probably about a half an inch apart. Then that lets me turn that over just with my hand. I push it into place where I want it on my background. Once I've got it in place, I just turn it to the back and use an iron hot dry setting. I usually use a cotton setting. Mm-hmm. And just let that iron rest there for a couple of seconds. It'll dry those little dots of glue. It's anchored perfectly in place. And the benefit to that is when you stitch, you know that no matter how much you pin or thread baste, your applique wants to just shift a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So once you've anchored it, you stitch it with that paper piece inside. Mm-hmm. You come in from the back when you're done. That little zigzag stitch has just barely nicked the edge of the paper piece and perforated it. I go in and trim away the center of the applique. I leave a good quarter-inch seam allowance. And sometimes this makes people nervous. I've had a couple of times at workshops where I broke out the scissors and cut away the center, and I about had to give, you know, women oxygen because they were concerned that we were weakening the top. But that zigzag stitch is so sturdy and secure, you don't weaken it at all. And what you do is just kind of grab a hold of your applique edge with one hand. With the other hand, you grab the seam allowance right across from where you're holding. Just give a good, sturdy little yank. It's going to pop that paper edge free. And then you slide your finger between the layers, loosen that little dollop of glue, and it just peels right out. So it's really slick. You don't have to wet it to release any glue. And the paper just comes right out. It's done its job. You know, it's stabilized everything, but we don't want a quilt that crinkles. So now is when you take the paper out.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we talked about thread in this previous segment with Leah, and that was for, you know, the
yes, I learned a lot. I was listening.
Yeah. Yeah, put all the layers together. So with you, what weight thread do you prefer? And do you match the color, or what is your technique?
Well, you're going to use monofilament thread in your needle, and you're going to use just a good neutral all-purpose thread in your bobbin. And you would think in theory that you would want a really fine gauge thread in your bobbin to kind of counterbalance that monofilament. Mm-hmm. But what I have found is that for most machines, about a 50 weight thread works really well. It's a good counterbalance to that monofilament. I find that if your thread is too fine, what can happen is that with the monofilament being a little bit stretchy, it'll tend to want to pull little dots of your bobbin thread up to the surface. Now, once you have your perfect settings, you know, experiment on your machine and discover where your machine needs to be set. And I really go into detail about this in my books to give you good guidelines. You really, honestly, could use red in your bobbin, and it will not come up, and you're safe. And I used to actually say that at my workshops. I've stopped doing that now because I did have somebody one time that decided she was going to put that theory to the test.
Oh, no.
And it actually worked, but we don't want to tempt fate. So
that's right.
A good neutral color, kind of a moderate, you know, middle-of-the-road, medium type of color. And I do find that there doesn't, to me, seem to be any one best thread. Again, it's what works well in your machine, what you're able to find to purchase where you live. But more often than not, I find a 50-weight thread is a good choice.
Yeah, and people have 50-weight because that's what they're generally piecing with, and they're doing maybe other types of applique or whatever. So they don't have to. They can start with that. It's a good one to start with, isn't it?
Yes, you could, and it's just a good all-around, all-purpose thread. It'll do a lot of little jobs for you.
Yeah. So before we take our break, I want to tell people Kim's website is her name, kimdeal.com. And also, if you go to allpeoplequilt.com, American Patchwork and Quilting site, you can go into the little search box and put Kim's name. And up pops all kinds of goodies. Kim is very prolific. Yes, yes. And there's one that I was just looking at the other day where, you know, there's patterns. So there's, you know, some more info, but there's also patterns. So if you haven't tried Kim's patterns yet, there's a few of them on the site. So Kim, we're going to take a little break.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, and when we come back, we're going to talk a bit about your fabric and your most recent book. So
sounds good. I can't wait.
Yes, American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm here with Kim Deal. So, Kim, tell me about your fabric lines. Who are they with?
I design fabric for Henry Glass Fabrics. Love working with them. They really have let me kind of be creative and grow and learn with each new line that I do. And did a line recently for them called Hearthside Seasons. Mm. And that was so much fun because it let me pull together lots of really rich, vivid colors that you could use to make quilts that had kind of an autumn feel, or use those really rich colors that come out at the holidays. And I actually have a new line that's coming out with them in about a month. I believe it's slated for August. And it's called Perfect Pairings, and the whole idea behind this line is that it's really fun when you find those two perfect colors that just work together beautifully and to really capitalize on that. Mm-hmm. So there are little mini collections that come out under that, that all-encompassing name. There's a little red and cream collection called Biscuits and Jam, and then there's a neat little mini collection called Oats and Herbs that's greens and creams. And there is a free project for each of those mini lines that have 8 different prints each in them. And then your quilt shops also will have a free little bonus project for each one, just fun little mini quilts. I think they're about 13 or 14 inches square.
Oh, cool. That's neat to have the little small projects. They're fun to do. The instant gratification.
Absolutely, because you don't want to spend weeks or months, you know, on a single quilt. Once in a while you do, but it's nice just to get things done. And these two color lines are fun because they really look like that very traditional kind of vintage feeling two-color quilt that we've all loved, you know, for so many years.
They're gorgeous. You can go to henryglassfabrics.com and see both of Kim's most recent lines and download the free patterns. Speaking of patterns, you have a quilt called Garden Medallion that'll be appearing in the October issue of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine, which is available the beginning of August. Tell me about the quilt.
Oh, I love this quilt. It just really kind of encompasses everything that I do. It's a medallion style quilt. It's got a beautiful kind of a floral applique center that's layered over an easy kind of a square and a square block. And then it's surrounded with churn dash blocks. Beautiful warm setting squares that use kind of a tobacco-y caramely brown color and then an easily applique border that kind of takes the elements from the center. It's very traditional feeling and design, but I've colored it with really kind of whimsical colors. You know, they're kind of cranberry reds and olive greens, oranges, turquoise blue. So it's really just rich and colorful. So it's got kind of a vintage flair to it, but it feels fresh.
Now, do people make your designs in, like, you know, really cottagey kind of pastels? Have you seen them made up in batiks and brights?
You know, it's funny, when I travel and teach my workshops, one of the most fun things for me is to get to see what fabrics people bring to class. And it really has surprised me. just how many people do come, and they'll make this very traditional pattern I design, and they'll use batiks or brights. I mean, we're talking like Freddie Moran, wild things, you know. And
center of the sun.
Oh, absolutely. And it really has made me realize that it is not so much the quilt design that determines the feel of your quilt. It's what you make it from. Mm-hmm. You can take the most vintage feeling project, and if you do something in batiks or brights or just these really neon colors, it takes on a whole different feel. And I still haven't gotten tired of seeing that.
I know. I love that part, too. You just say, what are you working with? Your blacks and whites?
And I learn things when I see those colors put together. I learn at every workshop.
It is. It is the most fun. I'm always taking pictures of everything in progress.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you have some books, Miss Kim.
I have a lot of books. I have a series of books I've done for Martingale and Company, and they're all kind of, they start with the word simple, and I really enjoy those. The quilts I make are not, for the most part, heirloom, award-winning, really intricate, you know, like mariner's compasses and things. They're all just kind of simple, you know, old-fashioned designs as a starting point. So I've done a whole series on these books with that as a jumping-off point. And actually, we just did the photo shoot last week for a new one called Simple Appeal that will be out in the spring of 2014. So I'm really excited about that.
Ooh, when you do a photo shoot, do you go to their offices?
I did the photo shoot in the Seattle area because that's where Martingale is based out of, and they're awesome about finding homes, you know, that have that kind of vintage, homey, warm feel like I like. I love using antiques and kind of repurposing things and giving them, you know, new life. Use things that aren't just traditional, what you would expect in a home, and I love it when you put the quilts with those. And my home looks like that. But you can only do so many photo shoots in my home, so then we're on the hunt, and we just finished this shoot, and I just have the most fun doing those. It just really lets me kind of be free to show people different fun ways they can use quilts in their own home.
Right, because you have quilts that are all different sizes, and you do a lot of projects that are very, what I call very doable, because they're like wall size or tabletop or size.
Yes.
And why do you enjoy those personally?
Well, I probably do more lap quilts than anything else. I think what's really awesome about those is that they're a great jumping off point. You know, you can add a couple of rows, a few more blocks, an extra border, and you've got a bed quilt. Mm-hmm. Take a little bit away, and you've got, you know, a wall hanging or a table topper. They're very versatile, but I do believe in using my quilts all through my home. I don't like making a quilt and having to pack it away. So, you know, sometimes I'll roll them up and put them in crocks. I use lots of wall shelves, herb ladders, tabletops, just, you know, lots of different ways. Sometimes the hardest part is knowing when to stop. I try to be cognizant of the fact that my husband doesn't want to feel like he's living in a quilt shop. So, you know, my goal is to just make the house feel very inviting and warm and to actually use your quilts.
And you also have pets. So you have, your pets have quilts?
Oh, boy, do I have pets. We have actually a pack. We had three little dogs of our own, and then my daughter moved home to go to school, and she has a ginormous 11-pound chihuahua.
Oh.
And all you have to do is put a quilt down, and they are on it. So
they are on it.
They are on it. They think that those belong to them. But, again, I don't worry about that because I want my quilts to be used. And, you know, my daughters have told me that one of the things they loved about growing up with my quilts is that they were never afraid to use them. I would let them have their tea parties and their picnics on them. And, you know, they have lots of fond memories of being able to use those and wrap up in them and read books. And so that makes me feel good. That's my goal.
Ah, perfect. But I didn't have quilts in my family, so I didn't see them till I was an adult. I had no idea what. Never heard of a quilt.
I grew up with them, actually. My grandmother made them, but she had stopped making them long before I came along. So they were very worn, you know, much loved, well used. But when you're little, you just think of them as your blankets. You don't really realize what goes into them.
That's true. That's true. Let's talk about your latest book, which is got a little bit of a twist to it, called Homestyle Quilts.
Yes, that's a book that I did with my technical editor, Lori Baker. Came out last fall, and what was fun about that is, you know, Lori and I, we stay in touch in between books, and a lot of times, you know, we'll send each other little text messages or just visit once in a while, and we love talking about what we're working on quilt-wise. And then, of course, you know, being quilters, you know, none of us want to starve, so we have to talk about what are we going to cook for dinner and exchange recipes. And we realized one night as we were visiting that, you know, there are lots of quilt makers out there who are just like us, and they enjoy the same things. So we thought it would be fun to kind of collaborate on this book, do some quilts that were fun and easy to finish, nothing that's going to take a huge investment of time. And then, of course, we wanted to share our favorite recipes, many of which are like slow cooker types of things where you can get up, go throw something in your slow cooker, go up to the sewing room in your bunny slippers and sit down and stitch, and you can smell dinner cooking throughout the day, and you don't have to be slaving away in the kitchen. I'd much rather be slaving away in the sewing room.
Oh, absolutely. I love that part of it, that you've got, you know, ideas for how to feed us. That's a
Yes, we never want to go hungry. Never, ever.
So what is your favorite meal in this book, the one I should try?
Well, the one that I really love, if you're into just dinner time, there is a chicken pot pie recipe in there that I just adore. My whole family loves it. Even if you don't like your veggies, you'll love this recipe. And then there's also a little recipe in there for a rhubarb blueberry crisp, which is fun, and this is kind of the time of the year where we're still getting that last little bit of the rhubarb harvest, and neither one take much effort to make, and they're just like down-home, farm-style, everyday cooking.
Well, those would be the ones that I'll try first. You know, I haven't had rhubarb in, like, forever, so...
You know, you don't think about rhubarb. You think about go and grab the apple pie or the brownies, but it's just an awesome, easy, quick dessert.
So you have, we only have like a half a minute, you know, but tell me a pressing tip, because you have some really strong feelings on pressing.
Yes, I do. I would say the best pressing tip I can get, you know, put your pieced unit down with the side you want to press toward on the top. I bring the iron down on that closed piece while the cloth is still warm. Fold that top piece back, and then I run my fingernail right along that seam line, along the thread. That's going to part that fabric open all the way to your seam, and then press it flat from the front to finish it. I find a lot of times people lose a little bit of cloth at that seam allowance fold. Doing this will help your patchwork come out much more accurate.
Ooh, that's perfect. I'm going to try it, Kim. This has been wonderful. Thank you for being here.
Well, I enjoyed it. It's always fun visiting with you.
So everybody visit Kim at kimdiehl.com or allpeoplequilt.com. You can just put Kim's name in. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit me at patsloan.com. And be sure that you come back next week, where we have all new guests. And those next week will be people I interviewed at Quilt Market this past spring. So... this is Pat Sloan, and I will see you next time for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for